I'm Amanda Schumacher.
And I'm Melissa Boyles.
Welcome to another episode of On the Road with the American Society of Highway Engineers,
where we bring you conversations with transportation thought leaders and influencers from across the United States.
In this episode, we talk with Emily Preston, president of Compass Infrastructure Group, a women-owned small business focusing on infrastructure design, such as roadways and bridges.
Emily has been with ASHI for over a decade and is chairing this year's national conference in Columbus, Ohio.
After our two-year hiatus from meeting in person, it's going to be great to finally get everyone back together again.
And they've got some very exciting activities planned, including a special event at the Columbus Zoo.
Lions, tigers, and ASHI, oh my! So let's get to it and talk to Emily.
Hi, Emily. Welcome to On the Road with the American Society of Highway Engineers. We're so excited to have you as our guest today. For the folks who are not familiar with you and your work, do you want to kick things off by sharing with us who you are and what you do in the transportation industry?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Melissa and Amanda, for having me. I'm Emily Preston. I'm the president and owner at Compass Infrastructure Group. I have about 10 years of experience in the engineering consulting industry. My primary background is in bridge engineering. I worked for a regional engineering firm for about 8 years, working on a lot of the major bridge projects in Ohio, and eventually decided to venture out on my own and had a great opportunity to start my own firm. So I actually started my firm in March of 2020, not knowing what was about to be in store with COVID when I put in my 2 weeks notice. So it was quite the ride in the beginning. Really, my first day working for myself was the first day everyone else in Ohio was working from home. So it was a little bit of a thrill and also pretty scary right in the beginning, but everything's worked out. And over the past 2 years, we've grown and we're 11 people now, and we're about to celebrate our 2 year anniversary here in 3 days. So it's been quite a ride, and I'm looking forward to what the future has in store for us.
That's awesome. Was there ever a moment when you were starting up your company that you're like, maybe I don't want to do this right now with COVID and the timing?
Well, I think that when I first put in my 2 weeks notice at the beginning of March with my previous company, and it was kind of the next 2 weeks that everything ballooned out of control, it was one of those moments where you're like, well, there's really no takesy-backsies. Luckily, I've maintained a very good relationship with the firm that I worked for in the past. They gave me great opportunities, and the industry was very receptive. Our public clients were very receptive and took hold of the virtual meetings, which allowed us to get the word out. I started the business with a colleague of mine, and we were able to get the word out pretty quickly, go after a few projects here in Ohio, and were successful despite the circumstances right away, which helped us get our feet under us pretty quickly and be like, okay, we're going to make it.
What types of projects are you working on?
We do about 70% of our work with the Ohio Department of Transportation. So we work initially primarily on bridge replacement projects, some smaller projects that had culvert replacements, some steel bridge replacements. And we've actually diversified our service lines here recently. We hired a couple of roadway engineers and additionally a surveyor here about 3 months ago. So we're starting to self-perform a lot more of the whole project rather than needing to sub out to other engineering firms. And then also that helps us on sub-consulting roles, being able to assist other consulting firms with roles on survey, roadway, on some of these larger mega projects that we're starting to see a lot more of in Ohio.
That takes us into a question regarding what you see trending. I know there's a huge investment that we now obviously have from the federal government with regard to infrastructure, but even before the new infrastructure bill, there's been a heightened awareness around bridge safety and the need to invest. Are you seeing a greater investment? Are you seeing that trend as well?
In terms of bridge replacement and rehab projects, we've definitely seen an uptick in those types of projects. And more specifically, like I mentioned before, those big mega projects here in Ohio, it just seems like one right after another are coming out. There's actually the Brent's Bridge rehabilitation over the Ohio River, not even rehabilitation. It's going to be a full replacement. That's getting ready to get rolling here soon as well. We just found out recently. So there's a big uptick in terms of the projects that they're getting ready for construction, trying to get, you know, designed plans on the shelf. One issue that we're seeing, not just our firm, but in the Ohio industry is it's really hard to find the people. And I'm sure that's pretty similar throughout the states, but trying to find people to fill the roles for the workload that we currently have is going to be a problem in the future. All these big design contracts coming out and even trying to find entry-level hires right now, I'm not sure where they're going, but I don't know necessarily that it's to the transportation industry. It might be to oil and gas or some other form of the civil engineering industry, but it's been much trickier navigating hiring markets right now to fill the roles that are going to be needed to be able to get those design plans ready.
That's really interesting. And I know we've talked about that before on some other episodes. I mean, it's just a nationwide struggle, I think, at this point. So you're definitely not alone, for sure. And I think the question of, you know, where everybody's going and recognizing that there's this resource gap, you are kind of the partner to a lot of firms, right? You're supplementing teams with your valuable services. And are you kind of in a place where you're even thinking about partnerships yourself to support teams?
Yeah, we definitely monitor our own workload and make sure that we're not taking on more work than we can handle and bringing on additional teammates on projects that it makes sense. There's a big project, for example, coming out actually here in Ohio. You've heard of the Intel chip plant, kind of some big news throughout the United States. And it's going to bring 3,000 jobs directly from Intel into Eastern Ohio, just east of Columbus. And they're doing an accelerated delivery on a very, very large scale interstate project. It's going to be about a 9-month turnaround for design plans. And that's one specific instance where it's a $10 million fee. And there's going to be some pretty big mega teams forming to deliver that work. And it's not really not feasible for one consultant to be a part of. And as a small firm, we look at those opportunities very carefully to determine whether or not we can actually deliver on that type of schedule. Because when we're getting included on those types of teams for, you know, small percentages, typically 5%, 10% for DBE goals, or specifically in Ohio, we have EDGE goals, we're typically getting a smaller percentage, but we always want to make sure that we're able to deliver on what we're saying we're going to be able to do.
Can you talk a little bit about the EDGE program?
Yeah, so EDGE is a very similar program to the DBE program. So DBE being Disadvantaged Business Enterprise. In Ohio, for Ohio state-funded projects, they have something similar where they give certain percentages to what they call EDGE, economically disadvantaged businesses. It has very similar requirements to the DBE program. So typically it's minority-owned, woman or minority, and there are certain net worth requirements that you have to be under in order to be admitted to that program. And then prime consultants will have a percent that they need to meet on their design projects. And typically a lot of firms use it for survey geotechnical services. So that was one area that we saw in the beginning where it wasn't a service that we offered. So it was very hard to get on teams that required that small percentage that were typically picking up survey and geotechnical firms. So we pretty quickly realized we wanted to be able to get into that market as well. And so we were able to make a really key hire here recently with a professional surveyor. And one thing I found as a small firm is, you know, the people that we hire have to be multifaceted and willing to do work in different areas. It's not like a large firm where you're only doing bridge design calculations for 15 years. We have people that on one day they'll be doing bridge design calculations. On the next day, they might be out holding a survey rod in the field. And the guy that we brought on to do the surveying work, he actually wants to sit for his PE exam. So we found a way that benefited both of us where he's actually learning the roadway engineering side of it for about a year while we kick off our survey group. So he's able to pick up the experience that he was looking for while we were also able to self-perform survey work on some jobs. So we've kind of taken that approach on a lot of the hiring that we do, is trying to meet people where they are and find opportunities for them in their own personal and professional growth.
That's really interesting. That's actually something that I've been hearing a lot more about. And even my firm internally talking about how can we cross utilize a lot of the staff and where the interests lie. Have they changed over the years? So keeping a pulse on your staff and new hires especially is really important. It's really forward thinking on your part. Are you noticing, you know, these, you mentioned some of these larger projects, are they going in a traditional type of delivery mostly, or are you seeing most of them go via like a public-private partnership or P3 or design build or any form of alternate delivery?
In Ohio, it's kind of a mixed bag. Most of the recent ones have been the traditional design bid build. However, there have been some select ones that have gone design build, and usually it involves the schedule as to why the department is deciding to go that way. The Brent Spence Bridge that I mentioned previously, that one's actually going to go design build. So that's probably the $1 billion construction cost project. So once you get into those projects of that size, I think department's looking at those non-traditional procurement types.
Do you have any advice that you would offer or lessons learned after starting your business?
I think that getting comfortable with being uncomfortable is a huge thing. Whether you're looking to start your own business or just advance in the position that you're in at your current firm, taking on responsibilities that you're normally not used to. And you can plan and plan and plan all you want, but the best experience you're going to get is by doing it. And I've put myself in a lot of uncomfortable positions, just in the sense that I didn't know everything that I needed to do it, but knew that once I got there, I would figure it out. And that's definitely been the case in starting my own business. For example, accounting. I have to do with the accounting and the invoicing for our company. You know, at a large firm, you're not doing that. You're maybe reviewing invoices before the accounting department sends them out. But here I've set up an accounting system that's similar to mid-sized regional firms do. And somehow you just figure it out. And it's really fun. Ultimately, you just have to take the leap on that thing that you're interested in doing. And that's probably the best piece of advice I can give.
Except maybe don't start at the start of the pandemic if you can help it, right?
Well, you know, surprisingly, there are pros. And I'm probably an optimist in many ways, where I see the glass half full rather than half empty and make the most out of whatever I'm given. But the one benefit, I think it's prefaced with saying that my business partner and I had very good pre-existing relationships with public clients that we had. You know, we've done good work in the past and people were confident that we would be able to do that in the future. So we didn't have to cold call anyone when we were getting going with our company. We just focused on clients that we'd already worked with in the past. So luckily, when everything went virtual and we had these digital meetings, these weren't people that we'd seen for the first time. They're just catching up with us. Whereas if you had been cold calling someone and trying to have a virtual meeting, it's just not the same. Where I'm going with that, and where the pro is that when we were planning for the business, you're thinking what expenses you're going to have. And when you think about going out and marketing new services to people, you're driving a half hour to lunch, you're spending an hour and a half at lunch, you're driving back, all said and done, you're spending a lot of time that could have been actually working on the projects. And you're probably meeting one or two people from the local area that you're in, whether it's with a prime consultant or it's with a client. What the digital marketing allowed us to do was, you know, you're sitting in the basement of your house, you have a 45-minute call that you can hop on right after you got done doing some technical work, and you can meet 10 people from a company. Some are in a different state, some are up in, let's say, for example, in Ohio, one's in Columbus, one's in Cleveland, one's in Cincinnati. And we were able to really quickly get the word out about what we were doing. And whereas in the normal age pre-COVID, it would have taken a long time to be able to get that information out, and a lot of time. Overall, in that sense, it actually benefited us.
It's definitely a glass half full mindset, but it does sound like you made the most of it and took advantage of our virtual environment to promote your business. So kudos to you. One, it's scary. Like you said, you can't take it back once you've given your notice, but you're up to 11 staff and you're celebrating your second year. So very exciting times.
Thank you. One other cool thing that has kind of came out of COVID era, we set up all of our systems in a way that was completely digital. I mean, you know, a lot of other companies, because they've been in existence for 40 years, it's very expensive for them to make changes to their server implementation and things like that. So we've been able to do a lot of different approaches to other companies have traditionally done. For example, we have a completely cloud server. So you don't have to worry if our people are working remotely from anywhere. It's not a big deal. We've had some different approaches at times, just because of getting started at a later date. And also because of COVID, it kind of forced you into making those decisions.
Talk a little bit about how you first heard about ASHI, how you joined, and your involvement now.
I have been involved with ASHI since 2011. I was actually a student at The Ohio State University, and one of the past national presidents, Dave Jones, was a owner of a firm here in Columbus, and I had cold emailed him about trying to work part-time during the school year so that I could kind of support the cost of my education. And he brought me in, talked to me, hired me for the position, let me work part-time. And he was highly involved in the ASHI organization. And I kind of heard him talk about it from time to time. And they had a couple of happy hours here with our local Central Ohio section. And so I said, hey, I'm going to just figure out what this is about. So went, played some cornhole and kept showing up to those events and joined after that. And very early on, after I graduated college, young 22, 23 year old, I always attended the happy hours. We have a March Madness event every year. And I realized that one year there weren't many happy hours. And so I reached out to Aaron Call, who actually is the co-chair with me this year for the national conference that will be in Columbus. I reached out to him and said, hey, when are you guys having a happy hour again? He's like, well, actually, we need a membership chair to plan these happy hours. So it seemed like a natural progression to get into. So I hopped on the Central Ohio board. That might have been in 2013 or 2014 and got to be involved in that capacity. And then over the years, just moved around in different board positions, like a programs director, just making sure that we had quality content for our luncheons. Our project of the year awards luncheon facilitated that. And then eventually served as the Central Ohio section president. 2018, that was the year I got married. So a big deal for me, whether I put Steva or Preston on my plaque, but went with the married name, Preston. And that was also the same year that we submitted an application to have the 2022 National Conference in Columbus, and were fortunate to get selected for that. So that carried my role into serving as a co-chair on the National Conference Committee, with Aaron Call serving as the other co-chair. And then overall, throughout that whole time since graduating college and being a part of ASHI as an intern, it's really helped me develop a strong network of people. And it's been a very organic progression over the years. You know, the first time you walk into a luncheon as a 19-year-old college student, you don't know anyone there. But luckily, you know, the one person that was employing you at the time and they introduce you to one other person, it's like a snowball effect over the years where all of a sudden I'm 10 years out of that and I walk into a room and I know 80% of the people there. And now I get to be in the shoes of my previous employer and introduce staff members that I bring to new people and allow them to build their little snowball of a network, which to me is really fun. I really like connecting people.
You're going to be doing a yeoman's job of connecting people here pretty quickly leading up to that national conference. Do you want to tell us about the process of being selected to host the national conference and all of your activities leading up to what we can expect in May?
Yeah. So back in 2018, our Central Ohio section pulled together an application and we just identified a lot of key members in ASHI in the Central Ohio section that would help us deliver the conference in 2022, knowing that it's a big undertaking. We have several people still in our ASHI section who helped host the 1990 conference. And so they really filled us in on how much actual work it was going to be. So we weren't blindsided going in. And so we identified a lot of our really involved members and made sure that they were on board with us submitting an application and knew that they would be supportive of it if we got selected. And then, you know, fortunately, we did get selected. And Aaron and I immediately identified all the different committees that were going to be needed for the conference. It had some hard discussions about who should be leading those committees because we wanted to know at the end of the day that the work was going to get done because it is a lot of work. And that was 4 years ago that we got selected for that. And we're 2 months out from the conference at this point. And it's really starting to hit home with the amount of work, probably upwards of 50 emails a day about the conference. And I know that our committee chairs are all working very hard every day to make sure that they're answering their 50 emails. And knowing that ASHI is a completely volunteer organization is just incredible because these people are taking the time out of their day to, you know, be a part of this and to bring this to Columbus. And so over the past 3 years, it's really been a roller coaster in so many aspects. The Rally 2020 conference was a couple months away when COVID hit, and it was a pretty hard decision for them to have to cancel their conference. And now, having gone through the process of planning a conference, I can't imagine being in their shoes and knowing all the hard work that went into that to get it postponed. And I know it'll be in Raleigh again in 2024. And luckily, they'll have a head start on the different events. Same thing, 2021 went virtual. We were anticipating when we got selected, we started putting a few stop gates in place on our contracts in case COVID did still have an impact on whether or not we could have full capacities at our hotel, different things like that. So it really was a whirlwind with just trying to make sure that we were putting measures in place that were going to protect us in terms of not being able to get the numbers that we would normally anticipate for a conference. And luckily, it looks like all the measures in Columbus have been lifted. We're good to go. Starting to see really good registration and sponsorship numbers. The registration for the conference is open. The early bird registration ends on March 31st. So we're encouraging people to get on the website, check out what our agenda looks like, and get registered prior to that date. The other important date for sponsorships, trying to get everyone committed who wants to be a sponsor by April 8th. That way we can make sure that we have enough time to get all the sponsorship signage printed and make sure they make the most out of their sponsorship. And then in terms of the different events that we have, one of the most recent developments, which is pretty exciting, and I know our programs committee worked really, really hard to get, we have Harry Kahlo. He's the Associate Administrator for Infrastructure with the Federal Highway Administration. Our programs committee worked really hard through the Secretary of Transportation's office to get him to come. He's actually directly involved with the rulemaking and criteria for the new infrastructure bill. So he's going to do a Q&A after the keynote on Friday morning where anyone in the industry can ask a question directly pertaining to the new infrastructure bill. So he's right there on the front lines helping with the development of that. And I know the appropriation got passed recently, so we know that money's coming. The other thing that they're doing is the day prior to when Harry will be there giving his keynote, he's going to be in meeting with public entities in the area to address some of their concerns. It's going to be a small target group specifically for those public members to be able to just directly ask questions to him, which I think is a huge value. The programs committee chair, Tom Less, has been working really hard through his company to get this to happen. Really neat as a volunteer organization to see what everyone's capable of bringing to the table.
So just as a reminder to everybody, I know registration's open, early bird ends on 31st. Sponsorships looking to get secured by April 8th. Just to remind dates of the conference and where they can find the information, maybe the website.
The actual dates of the conference are May 11th through 15th. The actual main content of the conference typically happens on Friday. So that's May 13th. We have a general opening session, which is where Harry will be speaking as well as Jack Marchbanks, who's the Ohio Department of Transportation Director. And we have technical sessions that'll feature people from the City of Columbus, ODOT, several other public entities to talk about what's going on in the region, plus several technical presentations for people who are outside of Ohio. As this is a national conference that's going to bring in ASHI members from all over the country. We have a luncheon honoring our past ASHI national presidents on Friday afternoon, as well as we're having a Friday night event at the Columbus Zoo. And we're going to have live animal encounters. So I don't know if there'll be baby lions or baby cheetahs, but I hope it's one of them.
I did not know that was happening. That is so exciting. Oh my gosh, people are going to love that. You guys have a great program planned. If all of this isn't enticing you to come, I mean, I don't know what will. Great job getting all of that coordinated. I know it takes a lot. I was heavily involved in the 2021 conference that was virtual last year. It's great that this is going to be in person. I know everybody's itching to get out and see everybody again and just go through the motions of an in-person conference. Really, really exciting. Wanted to thank you so much, Emily, for joining us today, for all of your contributions to ASHI. You can register again on the conference website for the upcoming conference. You can check out if you're not a member of the Central Ohio Section, you can all go to ASHI.pro and get all that information. And register as soon as you can because you get that early bird discount. Emily, thank you so much for joining us. It was such a wonderful conversation. It was so great to learn more about you and all the things you're doing.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of On the Road with ASHI. We're excited to help promote the national conference and hope you can all join us.
We appreciate Emily taking the time to speak with us today, especially given the demands of running your own business and planning a national conference.
We hope you'll join us next time when we interview Rob Proffitt, a Northeast Regional Director and our National Membership Chair.
And in the meantime, don't forget to like, follow, and rate us 5 stars, of course,